Are we going to have an introduction or shall I just get into it? Is it introduction or we just start? Okay, we just start, yeah. Okay, so welcome to the most luckiest day of your life. Where you're going to learn how to be peaceful, how to let go, and how to be happy. By using some little mindfulness techniques, little training techniques of how to deal with the difficulties and stresses of a life. Because I think apparently you're all carers here, or thereabouts, nurses, doctors, or you're caring for something anyway. And sometimes in the difficulties we face in life, there are sometimes the stressful things which occur to us, and it's important to learn how to let go of those stressful times of our life. Now, one of the problems which we have, I'm going to start with a little bit of information, and then I'm going to be talking about some practices, so that it's not just words, it's something which you will do during this day. And some of the words are, there's an old saying that somebody calls you a bad name. So somebody calls you a pig, an ugly pig. So what do most people do when someone calls you an ugly pig? You start thinking about it. They call me an ugly pig. They shouldn't call me an ugly pig. They've got no right to call me an ugly pig. And if you're wise, you realize they've just called you an ugly pig three more times. Every time you remember it, they call you an ugly pig again. So you can see that when you receive scoldings, like you're called an ugly pig, that is not what is called stress or trauma. It's keeping on remembering it, keeping thinking about it again and again and again. And every time you remember they call me an ugly pig, you cause pain and stress on yourself again. Now that's just, you know, people calling you an ugly pig. There's also some physical traumas we have. Someone hits you or cheats you. And I don't know why it is that people can't let the pain of the past go. Someone hurt you. I was just talking in the little room there about a disciple of mine who comes every week to listen to my talks in Australia. She is a nurse in the emergency room of a local hospital, a really very kind and skillful nurse. And one evening, some drunk patient who was very badly injured, or could have been on drugs, just beat her. And punched her quite badly and caused an enormous trauma to her, so much so that she's now afraid and tense whenever she goes to work in the emergency room of a hospital. And any of you who've received such violence, sometimes it means that you lose your trust and sense of safety once it's happened once. And that is unnecessary. There is another way of dealing with traumatic incidents from the past. And I think you've already got a little bit of a taste of what you should do. They hit me, they hit me, they hit me. Every time you remember that, they're hitting you again. So somehow we have to train our mind to be able to let the things of the past, especially the bad things of the past, go. The way that we can let the pain of the past go is not focusing on the pain of the past. If you deal with those unpleasant things themselves, you will find that they will not disappear. The way you let go of the past is by focusing on the other things which happened in the past. Let me go back to a story which I told a few days ago, which is, for those of you here, I think would make a lot of it'll give you a lot of good ideas of different ways of treating your own problems and treating those of others. It was, a couple of years ago, when I was invited to give a keynote address for the Institute of Mental Health in Singapore. And when I gave the keynote to this big conference of mental health professionals, I gave many, many similes, many stories, and at the end of the talk, there was a gentleman came up to me and said, "There was a very impressive talk which you just gave." He said, "I'm a Christian, but I want you to please come and bless my facility, my department in the Institute of Mental Health, because I was very impressed with your talk." So obviously I agreed. And when I was walking with him to his department, I asked him, "What department are you head of?" And he said, "I am the head of the schizophrenia unit, which deals with people who have that terrible disease." And I asked him, "Just how do you treat schizophrenia in your department?" And that was when he turned to me and smiled. He said, "Just like you taught us a few minutes ago, we don't treat the schizophrenia in my department. We treat the other part of the patient." And I understand enough about psychology, having been a meditator for so many years, and I realize that they have got the solution. And I did ask him, "What's the results?" He said, "Fantastic. Much better than any other treatments. Because when you treat the schizophrenia, when you focus on the problem, you will find that the problem grows. It does not go away. Because you're looking at that person and say, you are a schizophrenic. You're not looking at that person and saying, you are a person who suffers episodes of schizophrenia. The other part of them is being ignored." That works with mental health, looking after people who suffer bouts of schizophrenia. You treat the schizophrenia, you're focusing on the schizophrenia, you're saying you're a schizophrenic person, and it gets worse. But you look at the other part of the person, then there's a solution. So trauma from the past. If we focus on the trauma of the past, what's happened to us, what someone said to us, it's very difficult to transcend, to get beyond. So the trick is, in psychology, it's sort of healing and moving forward, is to focus on the other things which happened. So, for that lady, to tell her, "Yes, that happened to you, but focus on all the other times you were in that emergency room when nothing happened at all. When you contributed, when you healed, when you got so much personal fulfillment. Focus on the other part. Don't make such a big problem out of that one thing which happened to you, or that two things, or three things. Otherwise, it will never go away." The idea of letting go of the past, sometimes we call that forgiveness. And sometimes people tell me, "How can we forgive someone who's hurt us so, so badly?" And there's an obvious solution. The first step of letting go, the first step of forgiving someone who's really hurt you, and it's the hardest but the most essential step, is to see something in that person which makes them worth forgiving. To see something good, beautiful, something you can respect and love. And once you see something in that person worth respecting, worth loving, then forgiveness becomes possible. And that is the very hardest step in forgiveness. Someone who's hurt you, you think they were a bastard. What they did, they should never have done that. I can't forgive them. They don't deserve forgiveness. Why should they be forgiven? And of course, forgiveness never happens then. If you can only move somehow or other to find something to forgive, then forgiveness is possible. Actually, it's easy from that step on. If you can only see something else from the past, especially that past situation where you were very badly hurt, which is beautiful, which is good, then the letting go of the pain of the past does become possible. A nice little story for you to remember. There was once at a funeral service over in the West, a man had died at a ripe old age, and his widow stood up to give what we call the eulogy. And a eulogy is where we say something about the person we've lived with and loved for such a long time, to give a little, you know, 5-minute summary of the most important aspects of their life. And the widow, the wife who'd married this man for such a long time, as part of her eulogy, she picked up out of her purse a piece of paper. And she said, "This piece of paper belongs to my husband. He obtained it when he was a student at school. He carried it with him all his life. And he told me that whenever he was upset or angry about something someone said to him, or even something he did, he used this piece of paper to let go of the past. He said it worked so well. And he told me where this piece of paper came from. He said, at school, in a boys' school, there was, maybe 12, 13, 14 year olds, there was a big argument in the class, and there was about to be a fight in the classroom. Now, boys growing up, you know, they're always very competitive and too much testosterone. And the teacher was very strict, shouted at them and ordered them to sit down and to take a piece of paper out of their exercise books, and with their ruler to draw a vertical line down the very center. At the top of that piece of paper, the teacher ordered them to write down the name of the boy in the class they hated the most, the one who was their number one enemy, which was very easy for the boys to do. The one they really hated, this boy's guts. And on the left-hand side of the line, drawn down the middle, to write down why they hated that boy. All the terrible, nasty, rotten things that boy does. And they very quickly all completed the left-hand side of the piece of paper. "Now," said the teacher, "on the right-hand side, please write down all the things why you respect and like that person. All their good qualities." That was very difficult to do. It took a long time. But the teacher ordered them to. So their number one enemy, they had to find something they respected and liked. And they had to fill the right-hand side of that piece of paper. When they filled the right-hand side of that piece of paper, the teacher ordered them to fold a piece of paper neatly down the center and to tear it so it was in two halves. The teacher then came with the waste basket and said, "The left-hand side of those pieces of paper, all the things you disliked and hated in your enemy, put in the rubbish bin. And the right-hand side of that piece of paper, all the qualities which you respect and like in your enemy, go and hand it to them." And she said, "This was a piece of paper which the boy who hated my husband so much gave to him, saying all the things which he liked in my husband." And he said, that stayed with him all his life. He realized, yes, we can look at the negative side of a person. We can hate them so much. And this was the boy who hated my husband so much. But he, even he, could see his wonderful qualities in my husband. And that helped him see wonderful qualities in the people who cheated him in life, the people who hurt him in life, the people who were violent to him in life. And he could also see the beautiful qualities in himself. And that made him forgive very easily. Not to forgive people who hurt him, but to forgive experiences in life which were very unpleasant. To be able to move the mind to see something positive. And by doing that, forgiveness, letting go, became possible. Whatever difficulties you have faced in your life so far, whatever painful experiences, unfair experiences you've seen in your life, if you try to get rid of them and focus on them, you will find they will just get worse. You're focusing on the negative. If you can focus on what was outside of that, the other side of that piece of paper, focus on that, and then you will find the negative parts of your life so far, they will just fade away and vanish. What you focus on is what grows. In a garden, if you water the flowers grow. If you water the weeds grow. And one of the best ways of getting rid of the weeds is only to water the flowers. So that's giving you some idea of how we can let go of the pain and difficulties of our past by not focusing on them. Not treating the schizophrenia, but treating the other part of the patient. Now, that is important if we want to learn how to be in the now. There's so many exercises which we teach, you know, in mindfulness training, so many sort of practices of meditation to get you into the now, where actually life is happening. This is where the action is. This is where you really should be, right in the now. But we have so much baggage from the past, it's almost impossible to let it go until I give this little brief description at the beginning. Please stop, keep focusing on the pain of the past. We were just talking earlier in the room, just sharing you some of the conversations about how much of our modern psychology now is almost conditioned, brainwashed into us now by modern events, almost like a group psychology. And I was mentioning that, just an example, was the death of Princess Diana. And as a result of that, people started to become have more grief in their life. When somebody died, they expressed grief, which I don't really think was there so much before, much, much, much more. It's as if that our cultures and our societies, that they encourage certain attitudes, psychological attitudes, to the difficulties we face in life. And with something like grief, this is a very good story. I was a monk for 9 years in northeast Thailand, and in many places I went, I was the very first Westerner anyone had ever seen, let alone Western monk. They'd never seen a white man before in some of those remote villages. I remember one morning going on alms round, where you walk with your bowl and people put rice in the bowl and that's your meal for that day. And I was the first white man ever to go in this village. And so the women were giving me rice, but instead of looking where they were putting the rice, they were looking at me, and the rice was falling outside. And the dogs were having a wonderful day because they ate all my lunch. They'd never seen a white person before. But because it was a culture which had never been, I would say, infected by Western culture, it was a pure Buddhist culture, that every time there was a funeral service, I never saw any grief. People didn't cry. At first I thought they were suppressing this, but the place where I spent most of my time was a local cremation ground, therefore villages all around. So we had funerals maybe once a week, sometimes twice a week. And the people who were the relations of those who died, they lived in the village. You would go on alms round every day, you would see them on the holy days, you got to know them personally, you were part of the village. They never cried when somebody died. At first I thought this was really weird, but after 9 years, you realized there was no such thing as grief in those villages. The thing we take as normal here was absent. And sometimes I just wondered, where did that grief come from? It's not a natural part of our emotional response. It's something which we add to loss. It does not need to be there, because I saw communities where it was absent totally. And that was actually fascinating to see just how these psychological responses are often conditioned by our peers, by our culture, by our media, into the way we deal with things. And seeing that, I know that there is a great opportunity to take out those psychological pathologies, unskillful ways of dealing with the problems of life. You actually can take it out and be free of them. You don't have to have grief. You don't have to worry about the traumas of your past. You don't have to always be a prisoner of the terrible things which have happened to you in the past. You can be free. So understanding it can be done, and understanding it should be done, will give you the opportunity to be free and set other people free from the difficulties and the traumas of the past. But of course you have to want to be free, as every psychologist knows. Going to give a speech at a grief and loss conference, after I gave many, many strategies for overcoming grief, which again is like pain from the past, one lady came up to me and she scolded me. What she said was, "You have no right to take away my grief." Why dare you take away my suffering? She liked her suffering. She got used to it so much that it was impossible for me to actually to take it away. And even the very thought that it could be taken away was challenging, you know, her very persona, who she thought she was. So be very, very careful. If you celebrate the pains of your past too much, if you identify them with them overmuch, in Buddhism it's called attachment. And when you attach to those things, you actually become... She was Mrs. Grief. She would go to all these conferences on grief and loss, not to get cured, but to be with her peers and feel sort of, you know, one with everybody else. And the very idea of me taking that grief away challenged her to the core, which is why she got so angry. So again, part of letting go of the pain of the past and being in the present moment is learning not to identify with that past, not to cling to it so much that you are the victim. You are the person who was raped. You were the person who was cheated. Many people can get into that attachment to their past so much, it's impossible to take it away. So, having said that, for those of you who are willing to let go of the past, who don't want to live in those prisons of anger and guilt and grief and negativity, for you who are willing to be free, this is how you do it. You sit down, close your eyes. Not yet. Amazing psychology, isn't it? The people, you expect to do some meditation here, so as soon as I say close your eyes, you just go off. So, how you do this is a skillful means which I've developed, which each one of you can do. And I like these skillful means because these little exercises you can do so easily at any time, not just when you're meditating, when you're going to bed at night, when you're in the bus going to work or whatever, or even when you're having a cup of coffee, you know, at a break in your work. It's a very simple exercise. And those of you who've been listening to me know that all these teachings I try and keep very, very simple, because they're not just for you. I want you to share these with other people you come across. So to give you an exercise which is so easy to understand that you can teach it to somebody else. And that's the exercise of the two heavy shopping bags. If you've ever gone to the shopping in the big malls of our world, and you've filled your shopping bags up, and you've been carrying them to the car park, you notice that those shopping bags are sometimes so heavy they make your arms ache and your shoulders hurt. Now use that experience as a way of associating the heaviness of those bags with the weight of your past and the anxieties for your future. In this little exercise, which I'm going to be doing in a few minutes, I'm going to ask you to close your eyes and to imagine. Use your powers of imagination. Imagine you've been carrying two heavy shopping bags now for many, many minutes, and already your arms ache and your shoulders hurt. The shopping bag in the left hand represents your past, with all of your history. Now most of the things in that bag are the unpleasant stuff, but also the happy memories of work as well. They're in that shopping bag too. You've been carrying them and carrying them and carrying them. All the bad things which have happened to you, all the unpleasant and unfair experiences you've had so far in your life, all the traumas of being in earthquakes, disasters, relationship breakdowns, whatever it is, all those terrible, painful things you've experienced so far in your life are in that shopping bag in your left hand. You've been carrying them for too long. That's why you associate that with the ache in your shoulders, the pain in your heart. And there's another shopping bag in your right hand, and that contains the anxieties and fears and your hopes for the future. And you carry that for too long too. And that is so heavy. I just mentioned the anxiety, the pain of the past, but we also carry so many anxieties for the future. That makes our brain hurt. So imagine these two heavy shopping bags. In these mental exercises, you must not rush them. I know in our modern world, people try and take the shortcut, they speed up, exceed the speed limits, and try and get things done quickly. If you try to do this too fast, it will not work. You've got to be slow and allow the process to work. So you imagine these two heavy shopping bags. You feel their weight. You imagine these are heavy shopping bags. Don't put them down yet. Feel the weight. You've been carrying them for too long. This is associating the past as being a burden you've been carrying for too long. The future anxieties is the weight which you shouldn't have been carrying. Then you focus on the shopping bag in your left hand, representing your past. And slowly, over maybe 30 seconds, you lower it to the ground. Slowly. And when it meets the ground, in your imagination, all the burden away vanishes. The ground is now bearing that weight. And you move your fingers away from the handle, your arm up to the side, so it can rest and recuperate. You've let go of the shopping bag, which represents your past. And then you imagine the shopping bag in your right hand representing the future. You feel its weight. You experience the pain of carrying it for too long. And you very slowly lower that down to the ground. Take 30 seconds to lower it. That reinforces the psychology of letting go. And when it meets the ground, you realize there's no more weight. You uncurl the fingers, move the right hand away from the shopping bag. You've let go of the future. You can do that at any time, imagining the things which you carry around which stop you enjoying the present moment. Great shopping bags with the fears of the future and with the pain of the past. But once you've let it go, you put it down. You realize just how free you feel you are standing between those two shopping bags, the past and the future. And that's what we call the now, the present moment, right here. And you experience that, get used to that, enjoy it. It's such a wonderful place of freedom. But first of all, I'm going to say that in this exercise, there are three stages of success. And I'll be mentioning this later on today. The first stage is we call recognition. You recognize that this is the present moment. This is what we mean by the now. Whenever we teach this, people say, well, what do you mean by the present moment? What is this now? What are you talking about? Because we're not quite clear of what this space, this place actually means as an experience. So after a while you recognize it, this is the present moment. Once you recognize it, you soon become familiar with it. You recognize it so often, it's like an old friend. You know who they are, you know exactly what it is like. You have familiarity. And only after you've attained familiarity, you can get to the third stage, which is ease. You're so at ease in the present moment, you can stay there for long periods of time. Just like you meet a new acquaintance. When you meet a new acquaintance, you get a new job, a new supervisor, whatever. And you've got to recognize them first of all. You recognize them, you're with them for a while, soon you become familiar with them. And after familiarity, you're so at ease with them, you can relax and be yourself in their presence. And that's just like the present moment. You go through those three levels: recognition, familiarity, and ease. And once you get to that third stage, you're at ease with the present moment, you can stay there for long periods of time. You relax in this moment, you enjoy it, you're actually here. And it's the only place you can ever find some rest in life. If you want to try and fix up all the problems of the past, I say those problems get worse. You know what I said? Just don't look at the problem, look at the other part. Then you can let it go. You can be free of the past. You can't solve the past. It's already done, it's finished, it's gone. You can't do anything about it, except let it go. And as for the future, my favorite saying, when is the only time you can do anything about your future? Right now. Right now is the place your future is being made. So if you're really concerned about your future, if you're really concerned about your future peace, happiness, even health, please pay more attention to the place your future is being created, which is right now. Right now, your future peace, happiness, health, and success is being made. Pay attention to this moment, and you're doing probably the best you possibly can do for your future health and happiness by putting more attention in the place it is being made right now. That gives you more trust that being in this present moment actually works. So there is the why and the how of being in the now. And once you get used to this, I've been teaching this for a long time. Once you learn how to accept this present moment and stay in this present moment more often, you will find you will be a much happier carer. You'll be able to let go of things with greater ease. And all the problems which beset other people won't be part of your psychology. You can let things go. You can come into the present moment and you can enjoy your life and have a bit more fun and happiness and energy and joy. Because I'm looking at all of you, hardly any one of you is laughing or smiling. You're such a miserable lot. So please live in this present moment and enjoy it. The past is all gone. The future, who knows what's going to happen? Now is the only time you have. So laugh. Not much else to do. So anyway, that's how to let go of the past and let go of the future and stay more in this present moment. And that way you'll be happier and happier and happier. You'll be able to spread that happiness to other people. You know, just like bird flu, like SARS. Laughter is infectious. So laugh a lot and you can spread a lot of happiness in your work. Okay. Any questions about what we said so far before we do the letting go of the shopping bags exercise? Yeah, you got a question? Okay, very good. Yeah, go on. Attachment to happiness, that's the meaning of life. Attached to it. you know that whenever I go on a motorbike, I hold on very tightly. I don't let it go. Please attach to the things which are worthy attaching to. And happiness is a beautiful thing to attach to. So when you have happiness, please enjoy it to the max. Why not?
Buddhist teaching is
not
good for attached to anything.
Oh no, who said that? Look, for those of you who are Buddhists, we've got what we call the five precepts, and one of those precepts is we're not allowed to drink alcohol. So one of my students, an Australian Caucasian man, he became a Buddhist, and so he gave up drinking alcohol. And one day at his business they had a party, a reception, and somebody got the tray of alcohol and said, "Now have a drink." And he said, "No, I can't drink anymore, I'm a Buddhist." And the man serving the drinks, because people know a little bit about Buddhism in Australia, the people serving the drinks said, "Are you a Buddhist? Wonderful, excellent. Now Buddhism is all about letting go. Come on, let go and have a drink." That's not letting go. So, please let go of the bad things and attach to the good things in life. Be attached to your health, your happiness, your virtues, your kindness. They will give you happiness. Okay, any other questions? So you're allowed to be happy. I hereby give you permission to be happy. You know, it's amazing just the psychology of our modern world. If we're happy, we think we're doing something wrong. Or sometimes we feel guilty. You know, other people aren't happy. Why should I be happy? There's something wrong there. No. If everybody thought like that, no one would be happy. We need some volunteers to be happy. So, recently, only a couple of weeks ago, I used some of the headed notepaper of my monastery, a beautiful sort of the logo in the top, and I printed out this little form, a happiness license. And I gave the holder, put the name underneath. I hereby grant the holder, and his name was actually Nicholas Christodoulou, permission to be happy at any time for no particular reason. Signed Ajahn Brahm. And I presented it to him. I don't know why we have to give out happiness licenses. But maybe in Hong Kong, maybe it'd be a good thing to do. So maybe this hospital or this facility, you can print out some happiness licenses and get the director, Cecilia, as far as you go, so she can actually sign them officially to give all the workers permission to be happy for no particular reason at any time. Okay, any other questions? Okay, so we can do a little letting go exercise, but first of all, for your happiness and well-being, please stand up. And please stretch. your limbs. You're going to be sitting down for a long time and you're all getting old, some older than others. And you do need, like me, to creak your limbs. Why don't you feel really, really, really good? Then you can sit down. I'm just going to do a very simple exercise. It's only going to be for 10 minutes. This is not a meditation retreat. This is teaching you some skills. The first skill is learning how to be in the now. So when you're ready, you can just close your eyes. It's helpful to close your eyes if you're doing a visualization or an imaginary exercise. So you close your eyes. And fidget about. Actually, you ever noticed how the ancient Buddhist temples always have very highly polished wooden floors? You know where that comes from? It's because when people sit on the floor, they always fidget. And over many hundreds of years, all those bums polishing the floor when they fidget has made these highly polished floors. Have you ever noticed that? That's actually where they come from. The monks don't polish the floors, as you guys do when you fidget with your flat bottoms. Okay, so anyway, so sitting down with your eyes closed. Now ask your body, is there anything I can do for you to make you more comfortable? Within reason. If you ask the body, you'll find out that yes, you can move a leg here, move a hand there, scratch. And you'll be able to make your body a little bit more comfortable. In this type of practice, we always try and keep our eyes closed. Because when your eyes are closed, and you know that everybody else has got their eyes closed, then you can, you know, pick your nose, put your finger in your ear, knowing that no one is watching. Get yourself comfortable. When you are comfortable, just imagine that you are carrying the two heavy shopping bags. You've done that before. Just imagine, visualize these two shopping bags full of things. You'll be carrying them for long enough that your arms ache and your shoulders hurt. That's happened before. Remember what it feels like? Carrying these heavy things and you get that particular type of, you know, ache in your shoulders and the pain in your arm. And even your hands, you know, the hands are sort of white because, you know, the pressure of the bag on the flesh. They hurt. You've been carrying them for a long time. And you look down at the shopping bag in your left hand. And on the outside of that shopping bag, you can read the four letters. P-A-S-T. The past. Because in that shopping bag, it contains all your memories, all your history. In particular, the very heavy, painful, unpleasant experiences you've had so far. Feel the weight of that shopping bag. And know that those most painful experiences are in that shopping bag, making it so, so heavy. It hurts. And quickly look at the shopping bag in the right hand. On the outside, you can read the letters F-U-T-U-R-E. The future. Because in that shopping bag, it's all your anxieties and fears. There are also some dreams and plans, but the weight is mostly anxieties. You've been carrying that for too long as well. You can feel the ache in your shoulders, the pain in your arms. You're carrying it for such a long time. and you feel both bags and both arms aching in pain. Now you just focus on the shopping bag in your left hand, the past, all those things which have happened to you sometimes long ago, but they still weigh down on your mind. Now is the time to put that shopping bag down. So you imagine yourself lowering that shopping bag centimeter by centimeter, inch by inch, lowering it slowly. As you lower it, your left shoulder goes down as you tend to lean your back to the left. Lowering and lowering and lowering it as your spine bends from the waist, leaning to the left. And that moment comes when it meets the floor. The weight suddenly vanishes, but you're still holding on. So imagine your fingers uncurling, straightening out. And as your fingers straighten out, you can actually do that with your real fingers curled up and then open them out. And then imagine just the hand going up to your side. Your left arm can now relax and recuperate, and the shoulders start to get loose again as you let go of the bag containing your past. And now you focus your imagination on this bag in your right hand, your anxieties about the future. Imagine that, focus that, feel that as if it's a real bag you're carrying. And you imagine lowering that to the ground too. If it helps, you can lean your body to the right, as if you really were lowering a bag to the ground. This is your future you're putting down. The fears and anxieties about what might happen next. It gets closer and closer and closer to the ground. And when it meets the ground, the tension in your right arm disappears. And you uncurl the fingers in your right hand. You move your hand away from the bag. Move the right arm to your side and straighten your spine. Just roll your shoulders and let go of that very heavy bag representing your future. You're relaxing and resting now. And you look down at those two bags. One is your past, the other one is your future. No one is going to take them away. They belong to you. But you put them down. You've rested. And you're standing at this place in between. In between the past and the future. This is the now. The present moment. Can you recognize her? The now. At first you may be tense around something you're not used to. Just stay in this moment. Be kind to this moment. Smile at this moment. Relax into the now. And soon you become familiar. This is the present moment, the place where your future is made, the place where peace and happiness can grow, the place where life is happening right now.
stay here until you can become at ease with this now. In the same way you're at ease with one of your best friends. So you can hang out with her as long as you like. You literally chill out together. As you in the present moment chill out. You deserve to be free. You deserve to be free of the past and the future just for this short space of time. You deserve to relax. No past, no future. They're down between your, they're down on the floor with you between them. You're in the present, carrying no burdens, no past, no fears for the future. Just being now, resting, relaxing, recuperating. Can you notice what that feels like? Is that pleasant? Is that peaceful? Does that feel good? I say that because once you recognize how beneficial being in the present moment is, it will allow you to stay there longer. If you value the present moment, it lasts. If you think the future and the past are more important, you can't stay in the present. No past, no future. What's left is called the now. It's like you have no business to do. It's like you really are on holiday. You're on vacation. You're just here now. Nothing to do, nowhere to go. Just being here. Not going somewhere, not trying to get something. Just being here. Just being here. You're not supposed to do anything. Just being here. Just being here. The time is now, minutes past now, on the nowth day of the nowth month, 2000 and now. Be here. Please attach to the present moment. Don't let it go. Enjoy. Give yourself a happiness license to enjoy the peace and the freedom of the present. You deserve these moments of freedom and peace and happiness. You work so hard, you deserve it. Enjoy it. How does that feel now? Now I want you to open your eyes and stay in the present. Don't go anywhere. Be here with your eyes open. Develop present moment awareness, even in normal life. Ah, oh, that felt nice. So, any comments about the exercise? Did any of you find that difficult? If you did, then get real bags. And with a marker pen, put P-A-S-T on one, F-U-T-U-R-E in the other. Put all your memories and photographs in one. Write them on pieces of paper. All the traumas and difficulties in one. All the fears in the other. And make sure there's lots of weight in them. Lots of stones or rocks or whatever. And do the physical exercise. I prefer the mental exercise myself. So any questions about this exercise? Now, I should actually say, when learning how to be in the present moment, it does not mean that you spend the rest of your life in the present moment and you don't make plans for anything at all. It just means that when you need a rest, you can go home into the present moment and enjoy some rest. And then later on you have to go to work, you have to plan to brush your teeth and plan to go to the toilet and plan to get the lunch and everything else. But you know how from time to time just to come home into the present moment and just to relax. Because sometimes people say, does that mean you shouldn't plan anything in your life, Richard? No, those are extremes. These are just times when you can just let go. Especially let go of all the painful memories of the past and all the fears of the future. And enjoy yourself. So, some feedback. Did that work? Put your hands up if that worked and you felt peaceful. Put your hands up if that did work. Put your hands up if you're dead. Very good. So learning how to let go is a great, great, great thing to do. Especially that in your jobs, sometimes because you're tired and because you don't know how to relax, that's why you're such a pain in the ass for the people you work with. It's true, you know, because when you're tired, you become grumpy. When you're grumpy, you take it out on the people who you're associated with all the day. So, for those of you who follow the path of compassion for others, it's the most compassionate thing you can possibly do for the people who have to put up with you, is for you to learn how to relax and be peaceful. Oh, there's heaps of stories I've gathered over my life. There was this one lady who came to my meditation class of the evening, and she said after the class, oh, I never felt like coming today. And I just came home from work and I was tired. And it was my children said, Mummy, are you going to meditation tonight? I said, no, darling, I'm too tired. Mummy, you must go to meditation. And I don't want to go. Mummy, go to meditation. Why, darling? Because you're a much nicer mummy after you come home from meditation. That's so true. And it's not only you, it's your bosses as well. So you should send your bosses to meditation because you've got to put up with them. So, there was this one fellow. He was an engineer. And he was what we call a Waisak Buddhist. You know Waisak Day? Waisak Day is supposed to celebrate the birth, enlightenment, passing away of the Buddha. It's like the holiest day of the year for Buddhists. We called him a Waisak Buddhist because he would only go to the temple on Waisak Day. The rest of the time he wouldn't be a Buddhist at all. And he only go to the temple because his wife forced him. So he was a Waisak Buddhist. He would come to my temple every Waisak Day. The rest of the year you wouldn't see him at all. And he was an engineer, and he told me that he started coming to the temple regularly. I said, "No, what's going on?" And he said, he had a boss from hell. You know what a boss from hell is? You all know, that's interesting. A boss from hell who always tells you to do twice as much work as any human being could possibly do. And he wants it done not just tomorrow, not just now, wants it done yesterday. And when you do some good work, they just take it for granted. You make one mistake, just one small mistake, and never let you forget it. And they are so hard to bear with. Every time you look at them, they're always scolding you. They never smile at you. They never say a kind word to you. They're just like some torturer from Guantanamo Bay. And you're working in your office, and you've done nothing wrong. You're not a terrorist. They're a terrorist. They're the boss from hell. And anyway, that boss from hell, he had a boss from hell. This Australian guy. And he said in the space of only 3 months, his boss from hell turned completely around. He became the sensitive, kind boss. And he told me, he said, because his boss was more sensitive and kind, was in there, is that, can you need any help with the work? Can you do it okay? And thank you so much for doing what you've done so far. Because his boss changed, he actually did more work for him because he was more motivated, you know, to try and help his boss when the boss was kind to him. But he couldn't help but ask his boss, you know, what have you been doing? Because, you know, please excuse me, but 3 months ago you were really difficult to work with. He said, yeah, I know. Even my wife complained about me. But, he said, you know, I realized that I was really upset and angry. I found this wonderful Buddhist temple where I learned some meditation and some techniques to let go of my stress. And the Sri Lankan Buddha said, what temple is that? Oh, this temple where Ajahn Brahma is. He said, that's my temple! But he never realized the great resources which were available there. When he saw in his boss, his Australian boss, how in just 3 months of training, he had changed his whole attitude and character to being a very kind and sensitive, but still very efficient boss, he realized that these actual practices work. And you can so change your attitude and change your behavior so you're not so stressed out. The wonderful thing is you do get more work done. You have much more fun in the workplace. You have a greater sense of like camaraderie with the people you work with. And your kindness and sensitivity, they do rub off on the people that you care for. They feel that you're a more sensitive, caring person. And that's what they receive from you. So it's a win-win situation all the way around. So that's what I'm doing. Yes?
What if you have a colleague who's very miserable and makes life miserable?
If you have a colleague who's very miserable, he can't make life miserable if you don't allow him to. By not allowing him to, if he says miserable things to you, that's why you have two ears for one to go in, one to go out. You don't actually accept anything which is miserable. But anything which is kind, you reinforce. This is a marvelous psychology paper. I hope that you've got a copy of it here. There was a psychology student doing a PhD, I think it was in Monash in Melbourne, and her subject for her thesis was the psychology of training dolphins in these theme parks. You know that in these water parks, these dolphins, they can actually fly through the hoops, they can play water polo, amazing tricks, they're very intelligent. But she wanted to find out how they were trained, the psychology behind training dolphins. So she got permission to do her PhD on this, and you know, she went to the dolphin park and she saw actually how they train them. There's actually no punishment involved. But every time that dolphin jumps an inch higher, you throw them a fish. the reward. If they don't jump high, they don't do anything, they just leave them alone. But one extra inch higher, another fish. And that incremental reward, but you know, ignoring any behavior which was, you know, not what you wanted, ignoring the bad behavior or the unwelcome behavior, but rewarding the good behavior by a fish, was how they trained the dolphins. And she had a marvelous idea, and she took it to her supervisor and got permission to change the subject of her thesis to how to train husbands. And she wrote this amazing paper. She got her PhD and got published all over the world. The Psychology of How to Train a Husband. It was exactly the same technique as used on dolphins. When your husband misbehaves, you totally ignore it. But when he does something you like, you throw him a fish. Metaphorically. You don't hit him with a fish. I remember one of the examples she gave. She said, when they were getting ready to go to work in the morning, you know, the husband, he was always trying to, could never find his things. Where's my shoes? Where's my socks? Have you seen my tie, darling? And she was always busy, you know, trying to get herself together to go to work. And she had to worry about her stupid husband, who was driving her crazy. So she decided to train her husband to find his own things. Very, very simple. Whenever he shouted out, darling, have you seen my tie? You know, the red tie. Have you seen my red tie? Where did I put it? She would totally ignore him. She wouldn't react. She wouldn't so shout back, find your own stupid tie, you idiot. No, don't react. But then when he shouted out, oh, I found it, darling, she would stop whatever she was doing, go to him and give him a big hug and a smooch. That was the fish. You wouldn't believe just how well it worked. So in a few weeks, he finds his own things. And now she's totally free to get herself ready without bothering about her stupid husband in the morning. And that was one example amongst men. This is so simple to do. So that's how you train husbands. That's how you train that miserable person you work with. Now find out the fish which they like. You know, if it's somebody else's wife, don't go smooching them. So ignore their bad behavior. But when they do something which is nice, say, thank you so much for that. Whatever it is, it's a little reinforcing, but don't get upset by their bad behavior. And if they find that you are improving, that you're becoming more peaceful because you can live more easily in the present moment, it's amazing just how many people say, what have you been doing? You know, you've changed. Can you teach it to me? Because a lot of times people are miserable because they're under stress. They're having a hard time. And all they need is a little bit of help, a little bit of easy techniques which they can do to get rid of the tension which is causing their misery. Coming up. That's why, you know, this morning's session, I wanted to not speak too much, but teach you something practical which you can do in the two suitcases. So you can learn that, practice that. Don't think you've just done it once, now you can do it. Keep repeating the exercise until it becomes almost second nature, so you can associate your past and future with suitcases, carry the past and put them down. It works. Yeah? When you're 78, I don't think you're going to change in this life. You just have to wait till the next life. I think. That's just a habit now. So it's just like somebody, you know, had a duck, and they tried to stop the duck going quack quack. It's a bit too late to stop ducks going quack quack. If your mum is an old duck, she's going to go back. So let her complain.
But the point is that when she complains and says things, please don't hold on to it. No, just let it go. But somebody asked me just about how can you actually do this when people complain to you or they say rotten things to you. And there's like a symbol in Buddhism, the lotus leaf. So you can imagine you are a lotus leaf. Because a lotus leaf, you can pee on a lotus leaf. And all the smelly urine just falls off. And after you peed on a lotus, you can't notice the smell because the lotus rejects all the water, it all falls off. Or you can get some Chanel number 5 and pour it on the lotus. And after you pour the fragrant Chanel on the lotus, still it doesn't leave any fragrance because everything falls off the lotus. So you live like a lotus. People complain to you, just like peeing on you, urinating on you, it all falls off. They pour Chanel number 5 on you and it all falls off. You keep neither the good nor the bad. So that's what you can do. Imagine you're a lotus, you don't keep anything. You pour over. Have you ever seen a dog which doesn't bark? You've never seen an old mother who doesn't complain. It was really nice of me. If you don't you grow up like that. You know, when you become old. What's the use of complaining? No one really listens anyway. You're wasting any breath. You get much more in life actually by praising. Do you complain to your partner? If you complain about your partner, you don't get very much. So instead, praise them. Praise your husband. Darling, you're such a wonderful man. It's amazing just how lucky I was to have met you. You're such a great guy. You know, you're just such a hard worker and good around the house, and I'm so proud of you. You're such a wonderful fella. Now can I borrow your credit card? You got more likely of getting a credit card after you soften them up, first of all. So praise gets you everywhere. If that doesn't work, here's, I don't know if I should show you this, it's a psychology trick. This is a psychology trick of getting your own way, especially with your boss. So, because this, when I first went to Australia, I was number 2 monk. Then there was, I had a boss above me, and he was really a control freak. But I outsmarted him many times. So this was the example I used, because it actually happened. They were building a monastery, and I said, why don't we build a hut on the hill over there? And he would say, no, that's a stupid idea, wouldn't work, don't be ridiculous. I would not argue. I knew how psychology worked. I just, okay, I dropped it. You pull the suggestion in, and then you drop it. About 2 weeks later, when I was sure he'd forgotten what I'd said, I'd say it again. Why don't we build a hut over there on the hill? Again, he would say, stupid idea, don't be ridiculous, it won't work. Okay. The trick is, don't argue. Otherwise, you know, it doesn't work. What you do, you put the suggestion into their head. It's in the subconscious straight away. It works its way through. You wouldn't believe how often this works. 2 weeks later, you know, he'd be walking with me and he said, I've just had an idea. Why don't you build a hut on the hill over there? Now, I knew that was my idea. Because I knew I'd put it in his head. He thought about it subconsciously. If I knew it was a good idea, because it was my idea. What I need to do is get him to see it. And you know, for control freaks, bosses, it has to be their idea. It has to be their idea. So what you do, you put it in there, and as soon as after 6 weeks he said, oh, I've had this idea, why don't you build a hut over there? I said, actually, you know, that's a really good idea of yours.
I'd always let him own the idea and say, wow, what a wonderful idea, you're so smart, boss. Yeah, it really works. You can try that with your husbands. You can say, darling, I need a new dress. You've got too many dresses already, we can't afford it, hard financial time. Oh yeah, that's the point. Don't argue. The idea is in there. A couple of weeks later, that hasn't come yet, say, so, oh, darling, you know, I really need a new dress, you know, to go out with you. No, you can't have that. Just too many new dresses these days. We can't afford it. Shh. A couple of weeks later, he will come up to you and say, you know, I think you need a new dress. Oh, you're such a sensitive husband. Thank you for thinking of me. It's amazing. You wouldn't believe just how well that works. But you mustn't argue, because if you argue, they suss it out straight away, then you know you're up to something. Put the idea in, quiet. Usually about 2 weeks is a good sort of time, just to reinforce it. Maybe 3 times, after 6 weeks, reinforce if it doesn't happen. And after a while it happens. That way you can get your own way with your bosses without them knowing. Hopefully your bosses aren't here, otherwise it won't work. Okay. So anyway, it's our time for our lunch break, so have a nice lunch break. And to be in the present moment, when you're having your lunch, we're going to teach you how to have just one mouthful at a time. I don't know what lunch you're going to have, you're going to go to the cafeteria or whatever. But I've seen so many people, they've got a morsel of food in their mouth, chewing it. They've got another one on their chopsticks, just waiting in line. They've already got something heaped up on the plate before, that's number 3. And they're thinking what they're going to have afterwards, number 4. There are usually 4 mouthfuls in front of themselves. So if you want to do present moment awareness, just one thing on your chopstick at a time, you put it in. And don't put anything else on until you've swallowed. Don't even think what you're going to have next until you've swallowed the morsel you're having now. And that way, all your attention is on what's in your mouth rather than what's going to come next. Because it's what's in your mouth is what you're paying attention to, it means you're enjoying your food much more. And your saliva and other things are coming out from your body, you digest the food much more efficiently. When you're not paying attention, all the juices don't come out. Pay attention, they do. And that way, you can be much healthier, with much better digestion, because you're mindful of what you're eating and you're enjoying it. So try that practice at lunch. See if you can do it. And see you back here at 12:30. Bon appetit.